For Radio Autonomía, this is Alita with a special interview with members of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. Dulce and Luis, it's really great to have you all. I'd love to have you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this kind of organizing work.
Yeah, for sure. So thank you for having us today. My name is Dulce Guerrero, and I am part of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. I became involved with the National Immigrant Youth Alliance about 2.5 years ago or so. So I became involved after a traffic violation landed my mother in jail in Georgia for driving without a license. Mm-hmm. So driving without a license could lead to your deportation a lot of the time in the state of Georgia. So her being in jail those 2 days really, really triggered me to get involved and try to find out more information. So mm-hmm. I've been involved for about 2.5 years after that incident.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and my name is Luis León. I'm 20 years old, originally from Veracruz. Migrated here in 1998 with my family to Western North Carolina. Went to high school, graduated high school, and then moved back down to Mexico in 2011. After moving back down to Mexico and realizing that and trying to continue my career in education in college, you know, realizing that I couldn't fit in and it wasn't for me, mm-hmm. National Immigrant Youth Alliance actually got a hold of me and invited me on this crazy project called the Bring Them Home Project. We can talk about, you know, a little bit on later on. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got involved in this kind of movement. Yes.
Okay, great. So tell us about the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. What is this organization? How does it work? And what is the sort of specific focus?
Right, so the National Immigrant Youth Alliance began in 2011, January of 2011, and it began after the failure of the DREAM Act. Mm-hmm. So the DREAM Act was put up for vote December 2010, mm-hmm. and then after it failed, the group of students who had been pushing and lobbying for the DREAM Act got together, and they started this new organization called the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. So it started after the failure of the DREAM Act, and what it is, it's basically a mother organization that is made up of many grassroots organizations in different states. So we have groups in about 26 different states.
Oh, wow.
So locally, I work with Dream Activist Georgia, and Dream Activist Georgia is affiliated with the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. Luis, who's here, works with Mount Activist in North Carolina, and they're also affiliated with the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. Okay. So we have about 26 different grassroots groups across the state who are all affiliated with the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. And basically what the alliance is, it's a group of undocumented youth who get together and we address different issues in the community, whether it's family separation or deportation, access to higher education for undocumented youth, whatever it might be. We're an autonomous group, mm-hmm. meaning that we are led by undocumented youth. So all of our groups are undocumented youth led. Everyone within the organization in leadership positions are undocumented, and that's one of our core beliefs, that people who are undocumented should be at the forefront of the battle, should be in decision-making positions, mm-hmm. And should be the ones calling the shots as to how everything's going to work out. So we've been around since 2011.
Okay, great. So it's an umbrella organization that affiliates these grassroots projects.
Exactly,
like you said.
Yes.
Okay,
that's
great.
Exactly.
So there's a great degree of autonomy among those organizations within the alliance, right?
Exactly.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a really strong strategy, you know, from the movements that we've been in contact with, dealing with all kinds of issues, that kind of, you know, network form, but with the autonomy at the ground level is really, really key. So it's great to hear that that's kind of how it's organizing.
Right.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about why you think it's important to organize youth specifically around the struggle for immigrant rights and for immigration reform and all the issues accompanying that, right? So why work from the position of youth specifically? What are the particular challenges that immigrant youth face?
Right. So just in the state of Georgia, we have a lot of barriers in regards to access to higher education for undocumented youth. So I know that a lot of the youth that are involved now, it's because they have a lot of barriers towards accessing higher education. The same, a lot of undocumented youth in the state of Georgia, because it is the South, there is a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. With being undocumented, there is a lot of shame with being undocumented. So we felt that we needed to organize the youth because the youth, their stories are powerful. Their, you know, life experiences and what they've gone through. A lot of them have been in detention centers. Other youth have had family members deported. So we feel that they know exactly what's going on firsthand. Mm-hmm. And the stories that they have to share are powerful. And we felt like those are the type of stories that need to be heard. And that's exactly why we wanted to create the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, in order to have spaces for stories such as, you know, families being deported, mm-hmm. or family members in detention centers, and have a space where these stories actually have a shot of being heard and you know, have people listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned detention centers, which is a big topic, right? Can you talk a little bit about the specific challenges of youth in detention centers? You know, we often don't hear about young people in detention centers, minors in detention centers. What happens? How does that play out?
So I think Luis could tell you a little bit about it. Luis has actually been in a detention center.
Okay.
So he could probably share a little bit about his experience.
Yeah, so whenever I was in Mexico and then I joined on this Bring Them Home project, we were actually crossed in from Mexico into the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And we were placed into a detention center called Eloy Detention Center, which is located in Arizona. And so Eloy Detention Center is considered one of the top 10 worst detention centers in the United States. So being in there, when people think of detention centers, you know, they just think of detention. You know, nothing is bad. But actually, a detention center is a prison. A prison where they take all your rights away, you know. You don't have no access to a cell phone, you know, no access to internet, nothing. You're just locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting. We get when we entered this detention center, you know, we wanted to infiltrate it also and get stories out of men who had passed long periods of time or mistreatment in these detention mm-hmm. centers. And we did, you know, walking into Eloy Detention Center, we started on the men's side. We started talking to different men, and we met men in there that had been up to 2 years in the detention centers just for being stopped for driving without a license because, you know, they ran into a checkpoint on the way to work or
right.
on the way back home. You know, unfortunately, these men, you know, they're forced to drive without a license because they're not allowed to, and they spend up to 2 years just waiting to know if they're going to be deported or if they're going to be allowed to stay in the U.S. with their families.
Right.
And so, yeah, we also, in Eloy, we also heard about suicide cases. Because of these men, you know, they couldn't take it. Some men, you know, mentally, they were not stable in there. And they were, the guards just took them as crazy and ignored them. And these men ended up committing suicide in the detention centers.
Yeah.
And so whenever this happened, you know, when the men in there told us about it, you know, we asked, why haven't nobody, has anybody, you know, spoke out about this? You know, why doesn't anybody know about this going on in here? And they would tell us that they couldn't because if somebody was to try to speak out, somebody was to try to get this outside of the detention center, they would stick them in solitary confinement and wouldn't allow them to talk on the phone. They wouldn't see the sun for up to 30 days.
Wow.
So, you know, the men there were very oppressed. They were very afraid because mm-hmm. of what they did to them. If they tried to speak out, if they tried to fight back, you know, saying that this isn't right, you know, I have my rights, they would stick them in solitary confinement. So once we got in there, we you know, we gave courage to these men. We told them, look, you're not alone. You know, there's people out there that are willing to listen. And we got these stories out. And so those are some of a few cases that we hear about the detention centers, which is pretty awful and what men go through in there. You know, medical-wise, you know, if you're sick, you have some kind of internal problem, you know, they had to fill out health sheets, and then they would have to wait up to 4 days just to see a doctor.
Wow, yeah.
So it's pretty intense being in the detention center. They're just as any kind of prison, you know, but they put this fake view on them showing that they're, you know, just a little holding cell for men about to get deported in a short period of time.
Right, yeah, yes. that illusion that we have that it's a, you know, a temporary stop-off point en route to deportation, but like you say, that can take up to years, right?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the little that I've heard about the detention centers, you know, in the state of California, we have this crisis around the prison system, right? We have this, you know, massively overcrowded prisons, high numbers of people in prison, people of color in particular, and the conditions, you know, last year there was this massive hunger strike of prisoners, right, which lasted months. And this isn't the first time. So we're very familiar with the issues around, you know, inequality and the rights of prisoners. And from what we've heard, the detention centers, the immigration detention centers, are even worse than the worst prisons, right? Than the worst of the state and federal prisons in the U.S. Precisely because of the stripping of rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
These immigrants, folks that are considered undocumented or that are undocumented and considered, you know, sort of outside the law in that sense, don't have the same rights that even a prisoner in the state system might have.
Yes.
So these stories that you're sharing with us are really powerful because it points to this kind of black hole, right? You know, there's so little that gets out about it. So it's really important, I think, to do what you're doing and getting those stories out. So you mentioned infiltration of the detention centers. What do you mean by that?
So
basically, one of the things that we've done as a National Immigrant Youth Alliance is we have infiltrated different detention centers, mm-hmm. immigrant detention centers. And what happens then is we get organizers that are undocumented from the National Immigrant Youth Alliance to voluntarily turn themselves into immigration.
Okay.
So once these young folks turn themselves in, they end up in an immigrant detention center.
Mm-hmm.
So once they're in an immigrant detention center, they have access to a lot of the stories that we don't have access to
mm-hmm.
on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like Luis mentioned, they heard about the of suicides in there, and they heard about the bad conditions, and it's only because Luis was in there with the rest of the folks. Because
right.
other than that, these prisoners aren't allowed to speak about the suicides. They're not allowed to speak about the bad treatment that's in there. So what we decided to do was send different organizers to go inside and turn themselves into immigration, be placed in an immigrant detention center, and help bring light to all the stories and everything that's going on inside. So we did an infiltration at Broward Detention Center, and this was last year, October 2012, in
mm-hmm.
South Florida.
Okay.
So Broward Detention Center is an immigrant detention center in South Florida, and we had two different organizers from the National Immigrant Youth Alliance turn themselves in to immigration and be placed inside Broward Detention Center. So once they were inside Broward, they started collecting all these stories of the young folks that were in there, of the mothers, the fathers, sisters, the brothers, the students,
mm-hmm.
who had been placed in there for driving without a proper license,
mm-hmm.
or with, there's a case of a guy who was fishing without a fishing license.
Oh my God.
So he was
yeah.
in there for like months, simply not knowing whether he was going to be deported or not. So once we, our organizers were inside, they started collecting these stories, and they started giving them our phone number. So
mm-hmm.
then the people who were detained were able to connect with us on the outside, and we were able to work with the families in order to make these cases public
mm-hmm.
and help a lot of these men get released.
That's great. That sounds like a really powerful strategy, you know, to get that information out, to be able to mobilize, you know, a public campaign and their support.
Right.
And just to bring light to the conditions also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you mentioned, Luis, you mentioned the Bring Them Home campaign. What is this? Can you tell us about this?
So the Bring Them Home campaign was this crazy idea that the National Immigrant Youth Alliance folks thought about.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucy can explain a little bit more how they started it and
mm-hmm.
what their idea was of how to work it, and she can explain it more
yeah.
than I can explain on my side point of view what it was like.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so even when we thought about the Bring Them Home project, we were thinking of, we realized that we could help people inside immigrant detention centers get out and be reunited through the strategy of using a public campaign
mm-hmm.
and through making these cases public. And then we started thinking that a lot of the folks that we were helping were in the United States, and even though we had helped a lot of folks, there was a lot of folks who had unfortunately been deported.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was folks who we found out that they were being deported one day before they left. So there was not time to work on their public campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they were deported. So we wanted a way to be able to help these people who had been deported from this country. Or we wanted to be able to help young folks who wanted to access higher education in the States, but
mm-hmm.
because they're undocumented status, were not able to. So they took the decision to go back to their home countries and pursue higher education.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of cases of young folks who, because they were not able to continue with their schooling here in the United States, they go back to their countries and they try to continue school there. So we wanted to help these folks come back and reunite with their families, because when they step out of the country, many times they leave their mothers, their brothers, their sisters at home, and now they're in a completely different country. So the idea of the Bring Them Home project was to connect with these young folks that had either been deported or who had either left on their own,
mm-hmm.
be able to connect with them, and get them to turn themselves into immigration along the border.
Okay.
So the idea was to get them into an immigrant detention center.
Mm-hmm.
And while some people might think, oh, that's crazy, that's what we needed. We needed to get them in an immigrant detention center because we knew that an immigrant detention center was going to be on U.S. soil,
mm-hmm.
meaning they were already on U.S. ground.
Right.
So that was the first step. And after we found the folks willing to do that, the second step was to organize a public campaign in order to make sure that those folks were released on the United States side and were
mm-hmm.
not deported back to their home
mm-hmm.
countries.
Mm-hmm.
So we used the same strategies we use with every public campaign, in the sense that we drew a lot of media attention, we gathered a lot of support from the community, we had different representatives sign letters of support advocating for these young people. And Luis happens to be one of the young folks that decided to participate in the Bring Them Home project July 22nd of this year, and was one of the young folks who turned himself into immigration along the border, who was taken to a detention center in Arizona. And from there, his family advocated and gathered support until he was actually released on the USA side, and he's here today.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, I came here in 1998 from Veracruz
mm-hmm.
into Western North Carolina. From a very young age, my mother told me, look, you're undocumented. You don't have the same rights as anybody else. You don't have the same opportunities, or you have to work hard. You have to give it all. And I did for 13 years. You know, I started kindergarten here. I graduated in all through high school, you know, give it all my best always, you know, try to be on my best behavior. And 2011 came along. I graduated. And I couldn't find a college that I could, you know, afford. You know, I had to pay out-of-state tuition in North Carolina because I was undocumented. I couldn't find any. And it was at the end of the summer, you know, my desire to go to school was so strong that it made me take the decision to move back to Mexico so I can actually go to college and where I could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. In August of 2011, I moved down to Chetumal, Quintana Roo, which
mm-hmm.
is a state in the Caribbean of Mexico. And I started going to college there. I was living with my grandmother. And I remember, you know, I get there, you know, on the plane. I was really excited. You know, I was going to get an opportunity at the same time. I was sad because I was leaving my entire
right.
family behind. So it was a hard mixture of feelings. And, you know, as soon as I get into Mexico, I get the notice that I was not allowed to go to college because of my education in the United States. So they didn't know if it was valid enough for me to go to college in Mexico. So it was kind of hard for me at first. You know, I had to bring in all my paperwork from kindergarten up to 12th grade showing that I had passed every single grade and I
right.
was allowed to go to college. And it was all authentic. I had to get it all notarized, sealed,
oh, yeah.
you know, everything.
Yeah.
Translated.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And they're so complicated down
yeah.
there. And so, yeah, after like a month's worth of war paperwork, you know, and getting all in, you know, I was actually allowed to go to a private school. You know, private school took me in after I showed them all the proof. And I did, you know, and it was really hard. On top of that, I didn't know how to read or write well in Spanish, so I had to learn a whole nother language again, you know, at college level, you know, I had low grades, you know, excuse me. It was really hard at first. It was really hard for me at first, you know. There was a lot of prejudice because I grew up in the United States. They would call me Pocho because I spoke two languages.
Right.
And so it was really hard. And so after, like, my first exact year of being in Mexico, August, again, 2012, I received the notice that DACA had passed. You know, deferred action for childhood arrivals
mm-hmm.
would meant that, you know, you could actually get a work permit because you were undocumented
right.
and you were brought here before the age of 16. And so, you know, it was something I needed, something that I was waiting for 13 years. But in 2011, when I stepped out, you know, those kind of actions were still in the air. You know, politicians
mm-hmm.
were not making a decision. You know, we were not knew if there was going to be any help at all for undocumented students. So I felt like I didn't want to wait for a politician to decide if I was going to be able to have an opportunity in this country to study or work at all. So that's what I moved to Mexico in the first place. But whenever this happened, you know, I realized that, you know, maybe had I told myself, why didn't I wait one more year? You know, why didn't I wait one more year? I couldn't take advantage of it. Now I'm being left out behind. I can't apply for it because I stepped out the country. You know, it's something
mm-hmm.
I fought for 13 years. I now won't be able to take advantage of. So, you know, August came by and then I had that little seed in me that didn't, you know, leave me alone, that I was being left behind, that I couldn't
mm-hmm.
take advantage
mm-hmm.
of this deferred action. And so in November of 2012, I made the decision to cross the border back into the United States. And my set of mind was that if I can cross it the first time and if I can make it back into the U.S. on the first time without immigration catching me, I could apply for this and, you know, I could get away with it maybe
mm-hmm.
if they didn't all step out the country. So, yeah, I did, and I got caught. I got caught on my first time, and I knew everything was over in that point, and I got sent back to Mexico, so I tried it again four more times, and I was deported four more times. So on my fourth time, I had a 20-year deportation. It was saying, meaning I couldn't apply for any kind of visa, any kind
right.
of legal
yeah.
way to come back into the U.S. And on top of that, if they were to catch me at the border again, I was going to be locked up for 180 days of jail time. So by that point, I went back to Mexico, you know, defeated, disappointed, sad. You know, I wasn't going to be able to do what my dream was, to live in the U.S. again, be with my family. And I went back to Mexico. I started working in the resorts in Cancun, you know,
mm-hmm.
where they actually use my English and customer service. And then after that, 3 months in, that's when one of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance organizers named Santiago, which is from where I'm from in
mm-hmm.
North Carolina, contacted me and told me about the Bring Them Home project. He told me about their crazy idea, and I was like, yes, I'm on immediately. You know, I had nothing to lose at that point.
Right.
So, yeah, they told me to be July 19th at Nogales, Sonora, which was a Friday, and we were going to do the action July 22nd, which was on a Monday.
Wow.
So before that entire weekend, you know, they trained us with the legal work. There was a lawyer, attorney that was going to help us, you know, with the paperwork. We were going to ask for humanitarian parole at first, and if that
mm-hmm.
was an end, we were going to ask for an asylum. And so to pass an asylum, they're going to give you a credible fear interview. And that's when they stuck us in Eloy Detention Center, where we heard about all these stories. And while we were waiting for our interviews and we were waiting for it to be let out, you know, that's when we let
mm-hmm.
out the stories
mm-hmm.
where we were locked up. And yeah, in the credible fear interview, all that is that they ask you why you're afraid to go back to your country. And
mm-hmm.
like, why are your reasons that you want to stay in the
mm-hmm.
United States and that
mm-hmm.
you deserve this help? And a big reason is because many dreamers, you know, young folks like me at the age of 18, you know, they graduate high school and they leave their families behind the U.S. and go to Mexico on their own. And that way their families from here can send them money and help them go to college in Mexico.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mexico being a very violent state nowadays, you know, a country nowadays with other cartel and gang violence, They see that if you're raised in the U.S. and if you have family in the U.S., you know, which you do, that you stand out, they'll kidnap you and extortion you for that. They'll extortion your family, you know, ask for money in dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very, very delicate situation, which is very real. And that's what we told immigration. That's the our credible fear. And another week, you know, we spent 2 weeks in that Eloy Detention Center. First week, we had the credible fear interview. And the second week, we were approved of that credible fear interview, saying that we had passed the test. And so after that, they gave us parole. They let us out. It was such a great moment because it was something like this, you know, that had never been done before. And these folks, the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, had been able to complete and make it real. And so, yeah, after 2 weeks, you know, we were let out in Tucson, Arizona. After that, you know, we finally met the NEA folks on the U.S. side, you know, something I couldn't believe. I was in the U.S. after
right.
2 years, you know, after everything had been through. And then later, two, 3 more days later, I was back in North Carolina, which was something that was even more real for me, like I couldn't believe. And so it was a rich, great moment just being with my family after 2 years, the way they helped me out, the way they helped my family out, because it's not just them, it's them working with families and helping get their family members back and helping them reunite. And so, you know, immediately after seeing their work, you know, I signed on too, you know, said, I want to learn, I want to be involved, I want to help my family. I have a younger brother that's 16, you know, graduates next year. And so I don't want him to go through what I went through. I want him to actually have an opportunity in this country. So, yeah, so now we're here speaking about their organizing. And, you know, after this Bring Them Home project, there was a second Bring Them Home project because a lot of folks saw it through TV, heard about it, you know, rumors spread really quick. And, you know, they got a herd of many, many kids in Mexico saying, hey, we want to come back home too.
Yeah.
We saw what you guys did. You know, I'm going through the same thing. You know, I'm living the same thing. And so, yeah, they immediately started working on a round two,
and
which turned into the Dream 30. And then Dulce can tell you more about that.
Yeah, and this is a great segue to talk about a little bit about the status of the Dream Act and organizing around that as well.
Yeah, for sure. So like Luis said, after the first Dream 9, folks were able to come to the United States and be here in their countries with their family members. We had more folks call us and say, hey, like, we're also dreamers. We saw on the news what happened with the Dream 9, and we also want to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So we started connecting with these young folks, and we did a second crossing the same way that the first folks did it for the Dream 9. They turned themselves into Immigration Customs Enforcement. They were taken to a detention center in Texas. And then from there, the family started advocating, gathering support, and lobbying to make sure that their folks were released. So up until now, we've had about 16 or 17 of the folks released. We still have a couple who are still detained, and unfortunately, we have had 3 who have been deported.
Okay.
So out of the group of the Dream 30, 3 of them have been deported, and we know that the Obama administration has been extra strict on this group of young folks because they want to discourage future actions from happening. So right now, that's what we're at. We're kind of still waiting on the rest of the folks that are detained, waiting for them to get out, and still advocating and supporting them from the outside.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's really powerful to hear about these direct action campaigns, right? This is something that's definitely oriented around policy reform, but using really radical, on-the-ground, grassroots tactics. So we've talked about the sort of risks, right? You talked to Luis, you told us about your decision to join the Bring Them Home campaign. You felt like, as you said, you had nothing to lose.
Yes.
So what are the kinds of risks and what are the challenges of organizing undocumented youth from within the United States, right? Folks who are here, who are at risk of deportation. Once you're in Mexico and you have this, you know, this 20-year deportation facing you, I understand that there's nothing to lose. But from this side, What comes up in that decision for folks?
Right. So I think a lot of the folks, when we ask them to get involved and we try to encourage them to get involved, it becomes pretty difficult because your entire life you kind of live with this fear of deportation, or you live with the fear of being separated from your loved ones and your family. So when we ask folks to come out as undocumented, or when we come out as undocumented, a lot of folks feel that they are putting their lives at risk, and they're basically outing themselves as undocumented in a country, right? So it can be really, really scary for a lot of folks. And even for ourselves, the first time that we came out as undocumented, it can be a very, very scary experience. But I think everybody has a different point, a tipping point, I like to call it. and a tipping point just in the sense that everybody has a point where they realize, like, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been hiding my entire life, or I've been holding the secret in my entire life, and I have this burden on my back, and it's getting really heavy, and I want to let go of it.
Yeah.
Like, I need to let go of it. I mm-hmm. need people to know I'm undocumented. I need to stop making up lies as to why
right.
I don't drive. I need
right.
to stop making up lies as to why I couldn't sign up for that scholarship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for us, I think it's a way of kind of identifying ourselves as well as kind of liberating ourselves,
mm-hmm.
liberating ourselves from this burden that we've had to carry our entire lives, or this fear that we've been living with our entire lives. So I know that the first time someone came out as undocumented or publicly and I saw them, like, it completely shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, really scared. I was like, what are these kids doing? Like, they're going to get deported, right? Like,
right.
that's my first thought. But after seeing the way they organize and the way that the more public they are about their status, the safer they are,
mm-hmm.
because they have a community who's going to back them up.
Right, right.
So now they're not just anyone else getting deported. They're Dulce, the person who lives in the community, who
right.
people know
yeah.
and people support. So they're going to back her up and make sure she doesn't get deported. And we realize that the more public we are about our status, the safer we are. And the more public we are, the more people know. And the more people know, the greater community that we create. And the greater community that we create, the stronger the support we have. And the less likely it is that we get deported. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges, is just fear.
Mm-hmm.
A second big challenge could also be a shame.
Right.
I know a lot of folks who grow up being ashamed of being undocumented, or grow up with, you know, lowering their head, saying, yes, my parents broke the law by bringing me here illegally. So I think that's another big factor that also determines, you know, a lot of people's want to come out as undocumented is the fear and the shame that
mm-hmm.
comes along with it.
Yeah, it's really powerful to hear what you're saying, you know, that the more public, the safer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a really compelling argument, and it seems like the work of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance has proven the truth to that, right? That it
right.
really is effective.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about the situation of folks like yourselves who are undocumented immigrants from Mexico. But as we know, you know, while Mexican immigrants are sort of the most visible group of immigrants and the largest group of immigrants in the U.S., we have immigrants from all over the world, right? So could you talk a little bit about the challenges and opportunities that come up with organizing immigrant youth from a range of cultural and national backgrounds? Are there folks from other places involved in the alliance? Sort of what happens with that? Obviously, it makes it all more complex, right?
Right, right. So even within the organization of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, some of our founders are from Iran.
Okay.
We also have folks that are from Fiji, folks that are from Peru, folks that are from South Korea. So we have people who are from different parts of the country,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, Mexican immigrants are usually the most visible ones
right.
Within the immigrants' rights movement, but we do have folks from other places, and I know folks from the Middle Eastern, when they come out as undocumented, it's also very, very shameful,
mm-hmm.
and it's very, very embarrassing for the families. So even when organizing with folks from the Middle East, sometimes it can be a little bit harder in the sense that for them, it carries a lot of guilt and a lot more shame than what it does for a Mexican, you know, undocumented person in the United States. I think for people that we've met from Korea who are undocumented, the Asian American community, it also carries a lot of shame, and it's very, very embarrassing for the community and for their families.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also been harder to organize with the Asian American community because they do feel like they're letting their families down,
mm-hmm.
or there's this sense of pride where if you're coming out as undocumented, you're embarrassing the family,
mm-hmm.
or you're basically outing the family, and it's not acceptable. Or just in when I speak to different people, the way they talk about, like, the honor system and how they're supposed to, like, honor their family and respect themselves and respect their family, for them to come out as undocumented, it can be very, very shameful
mm-hmm.
in the Asian community. So I know that's also been a big, big challenge within the movement and within organizing with different youth from different places.
Right, which connects back to what you were saying about the more public, the safer, right? The
mm-hmm.
less stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And so for communities that are less publicly recognized as facing the issues that face undocumented folks, you know, that seems to just compound the problems around that.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Well, I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add, Luis or Dulce, about the work that you're doing, or sort of specifically the sort of objectives of this West Coast speaking tour.
Yeah. I mean, well, just the purpose of the West Coast speaking tour is to connect with other communities, connect with other young folks, other groups who are organizing on the West Coast in
mm-hmm.
regards to immigrants' rights. And just being able to share our stories with them, as well as listen to what stories they have to share and what resources that they have and we have and which we can work together in order to further the cause.
Great.
So, yeah, I'm just, as Dulce said, you know, trying to, you know, get the word out about how people can get involved if they don't know how to get involved, what they can look for, where they can look for. Like, there's a National Immigrant Youth Alliance webpage and the Dream Activist, dreamactivist.org webpage where they can look. And I mean, if they can't be there physically, you know, at a rally, at a vigil, you know, supporting us or supporting any kind of way, they can also, you know, there's petitions that they make. Petitions where you can sign on, you know, that they'll not help not deport people, or just making calls, you know.
Right.
Those little things, you know, make a difference also. So that's what we try to get out, you know, try to reach out and like get the word out about what's going on and how more people can help.
Great. So it's the National Immigrant Youth Alliance. There's a website for that. And then dreamactivist.org.
Yes.
Correct? Yes. Great. Sure. Great. Well, we thank you so much for joining us at Radio Autonomía. This has been really amazing to hear your stories and to hear about the work you're doing. It's really powerful and really courageous work. So we, you know, really want to recognize that. And thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
We'll definitely continue to follow the work of the Alliance.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Soccer was basketball, Lakers on the television, Luther on the radio. Never too much, never too much, how'd it go? But he was never at the crib, what you thought I did? If I made a league, I would get attention then. I had my older brother's crowd looking up proud, rolling weed to sell, chronic bumping in the background. There was Kid Frost, now they feeling brown pride. Aztec shirts, never cover, I heard inside. Said I act black, all the homies call me names. Rock the jersey by my favorite player, Penny Hardaway. Saving up all my ends, having to have the kicks. Part of a culture for the cultureless wandering kids. Couldn't tell you about my people's pyramids, but named Chicago started five, even those who rode the bench. Travel to the farm, call a pilgrimage. Other kids from other villages, language and experience. All imagining, having making it, having money, never broke again. Dating women, no for modeling. Back to reality, couldn't really be mad at me. Most of us never making it, empty salary. I get the feeling how this is purposely made to be. They brought the cross and the ball that left us without identity. No longer had any roots. I remember my brother was homeless while I'm in college. Spending days in the library, yeah, he getting the knowledge. Schooling me on a world I honestly never knew.
Hey, what's up, little brother? It's your brother Rich. And I'm just calling out one if you want to hit the store, man. I was telling you the other day.
I recall when my whole world changed. He gave me dead prayers on cassette tape. So inspired, I later started to paint. Bottle I had to rock it and rage if it was a fan. Now we play colleges, open, LA, rallies, demonstrations, yeah, we making a name. Meeting different performers and some of them super whack. But focus on your clothes and the fact you can't rap. Lost for so long, just looking and fitting in. Even taking distance from them red diaper kids. Like I was trying to live a Hollywood flick, as if my testimonial wasn't legit. But it was, expressing it through my songs. It's when a rapper from Mexico City came along. From the Central Valley, down to Chiapas, who rock stages. Now my biggest fan base doesn't speak the language. Don't ask, doesn't always add. But I'm breaking borders, only talked about in class. You ain't feeling this? Yeah, you can kiss my ass. But if you are, thank you very much, fam. And this is for my people that's living these borderlands. We hopping them, like the cops chasing us. Yeah, this is for my people that's living these borderlands. We hopping them, like the cops chasing us. Yeah.
You know, I learned a little bit about religion, history, things like that, man. It's just, man, it's just totally not the way it seems, you know. And